Hello and welcome to Not Pointers. We're your hosts, Mark.
And Stephen.
And today we'll be talking about a bunch of stuff. So, Stephen, leaving the political world aside, there is a lot happening these days in this world. The tech world has never stood still, and this is also true for 2025. So there's a lot of cool stuff happening left and right. One thing probably to kick off with is we're recording this. I should never do this, yeah, but as we recorded this fairly shortly ago, the agent mode has been enabled in Visual Studio Code. Have you been playing around with Visual Studio Code lately? Stephen is shaking his head, which is such a podcasty thing to do.
I know. So I have actually been doing more in code, which I don't know why. I also recently posted a picture of a GitHub project I'm working on that I won't be sharing on here, maybe for now, which contained quite a few different things which weren't .NET MAUI, which is typically my bread and butter, I guess. But I have been using code a bit for that because at first, I spun up a SQL Server on Azure, and in my old, this used to be how this went, brain, I installed Azure Data Studio or Data something like that, and that immediately came up and was like, dude, please stop using me. You need to be using VS Code. And I was like, okay, I'll go do the same thing in VS Code then. And then deploying an Azure function and all that kind of stuff, that was also easier through code. So in the end, I started up using code quite a bit for that project.
Interesting. So you used a Azure database for development purposes?
Yeah, I'm that kind of guy.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, why not? I mean, you got to use your Azure credits on something, I guess.
See, that's exactly my thought. I spun up all the things I could in Azure just to get that bill paid.
Oh, so Azure Data Studio, yeah, I've been using it also quite a lot on Mac. So if you're on Mac OS and you're looking for a SQL Server Management Studio SSMS replacement, it used to be Azure Data something. I should probably know this.
Studio, I think.
I was so close. Azure Data Studio. Oh, God. I was so close. Anyway, so Azure Data Studio used to be like a SQL Server Management Studio are based on VS Code. And lately they came out with the message like, hey, this product is going to be discontinued. But I think it's still good for a year or so.
Yeah, it has a while.
And to be honest, I've tried out the new plugin that they provided, that they're promoting, and I'm not happy. You make a request, it opens up a new tab. So it's just like, I got like then these feeds of tabs and it makes them in split view. And my brain just starts screaming that this is not how it should be, and I use my trail of thought. So I've been ignoring that startup pop-up for now, and I might revisit at a later time when they have figured out their Windows story to be a bit better, because this cannot be it, to be honest. But yeah, so I wonder, like, it would be so much easier to just have a Docker container running on your local machine, but I'm not judging.
Mark, as we are recording this podcast, just before it, I told you it's melting already. The laptop is melting just from this video stream.
Yeah, Steven is looking for a new laptop, which right now with the international cargo shipping situation, it's actually no longer the shipping that's the problem. But I think listeners know what we're talking about. We were just wondering, what is the impact on pricing in the near future? And should Steven hurry up or not? Better let him know on social media if you know that answer.
Yes,
but
please.
So you have been using VS Code, which I think is cool. I must say, like, I've been using VS Code more and more. I think I dropped these bits already a few times on the podcast. And yeah, for me, VS Code, I mean, one thing I think is really cool is it's like this, you can, with these extensions, you can add so many new features. Like I had once a client who was very heavily into CSV files, and you just can pull an extension for that, and then you get like rainbow coloring for each segment. Ooh. which is neat. I know you like rainbow, Stephen, so that's why I'm bringing it up.
I'm on board.
Yeah. But one thing that has really been tugging me back to VS Code over and over is the GitHub Copilot integration, which is just the best. I mean, compared to Visual Studio, I remember opening up Visual Studio a few days ago, and it was just like, this feels so clunky to use GitHub Copilot, and it's so much cooler in VS Code. Because I'm not saying you should do vibe coding. I don't know if you've ever jumped onto that train yet, Stephen, where you just go with the vibe of the AI.
I've encountered it a few times.
Yeah, I usually like doing like small stuff with it, and then it starts to take turns, and you go like, oh, we don't want to go down that route.
You're spiraling out of control, mister.
Yeah. So then you bring it again back in. But yeah, so generally speaking, it's just that's like one of the features that has been bringing me back and back. And lately, a new version has been released, which brings agentic mode. And the cool thing about agentic mode is you had for a while now, you could like have the inline chat, or like when everything started out, you were like typing in your IDE and then it just made larger prompt suggestions like auto completion, which is cool. And then you could like do comments and then it would interpret the comments and write the code down low.
That's something I've actually used, yeah.
Yeah. And then the inline chat came. So you can like right click, or there's a keyboard shortcut, which I would highly recommend, which is Control I or Command I in VS Code. You can then just like type in, say like, hey, I want to do this. And then it will generate that inline. But there's like a chat window that which you can open up, which in VS Code is Shift Command I or Shift Control I, I guess, for Windows. And there you can have a more in-depth conversation with it. So it can also reference multiple files. So it can then do a lot better edits because it gets more context on how this stuff should work. And you could do these edit things now for a while. And with agent mode, what you actually get is like you give it a task, like, hey, I want to extract this method, or I want to write this new class, whatever. And it will then generate that class, and then it will reiterate. And then we'll go like, okay, so now I added this class. I see you actually use dependency injection, so I might want to add it to dependency injection. Then it goes looking where the dependency injection is, and then it adds that, or it may say an extension for a dependency injection, so you could add it easily if you are in a larger code base and stuff like that. And it's just like, it does like these multiple rounds until it's like satisfied that it should have come up with your answer. And it's just like... You can like hit off a request, and then you can go for a 15-minute coffee break, and then you can see or go through the results, because it takes a bit of a while. And yeah, I mean, for some edits, it's like really cool. I would say always review the code that the Copilot is writing, because
yes, please.
You will not always be satisfied with its answers. Sometimes it just makes stuff a lot more complicated. But generally speaking, it can also speed up stuff quite a bit, like extracting, like doing some more complex refactorings. I've been using it for that at some points. If I really know what I'm doing, I'll just do it. I'll just say Copilot, just get out of my way. But yeah, it's a thing. I think it's again a thing where you have to like learn how to use it, because you are like in agent mode, you're actually writing like feature requests. So you like a user story, hey, I want this, this, and this, and these are my acceptance criteria. And the problem with AI is like its memory is like small. So like the amount of context that it can give is like not super large. So if you're on a super large code base, you don't want to like say, hey, here's my project. I want to do this in general. Now found out, because it will just like, yeah, until it finds where it actually has to be doing the changes and stuff like that, that's probably more luck than anything else that it will actually come up with a good result. But also like the amount of work that you give it, you really have to play around with that and get a feeling. Like I remember doing some demos lately, and I used the feature there, and you can like write down a markdown file, like where you put in all your requirements. Then you can go and say, hey, Copilot, are there any suggestions you would like still add to these requirements so that would be clearer? Which was actually, I must say, that it was not bad. I mean, I had to edit it once more, but I mean, there were some new sections popping up, which I thought like, yeah, that might be a good insight. And then I went to the agentic mode and said like, hey, look, these are the requirements. I want to do this and that. Go. And the requirements were just too much to handle. So it was like a user story that was like just too big for a junior dev to actually do. So you have to split it up into these manageable chunks. And you just become like this little product manager or this senior dev for a junior dev that then has to see that the work is actually in manageable bits.
It's almost like real work then.
Yeah, it's almost like it's just different. But it's also like a lot quicker. I mean, so with agent mode, like what you also get is, hey, you want to install this NuGet package, and then it will have like a snippet for the command line, and you can just like click on it, and it will just execute it, and it will add the NuGet packages and stuff like that. Or now you have to build it and run it, so it will then also use the command line. So it's not just like editing code anymore. It's like really doing your whole project. And it's now in VS Code. It used like in the stable version, it used to be only in preview. So if you haven't checked it yet out, be sure to go into that chat window on the right side, and you will see a drop down where you can switch between edit, ask, or agent mode. And,
I have a new feature I want to develop from my little own tool. So maybe I'll just ask it to freewheel that, see what happens. I'd be interested to see how far it would get. I mean, I know what it should be doing.
Vibes, Stephen. Check out those vibes.
I want to see the vibes. Yes, that's pretty much what I'm here for, the vibes.
Yeah. And generally speaking, so Microsoft Build is around the corner when we're recording this. So there will be some, I'm sure, like some more interesting things dropping. So stay tuned for that. And it seems like Microsoft is still quite invested in this AI stuff. So I think it will be to see. I think it will be interesting to see what else they're pulling out of their hats in the near future, because I think that there are like certain things where it will have its limits. But generally speaking, if it boosts your productivity, it's another tool you probably want to learn the skills to use it. Or else, yeah. And even like stuff like Don and Maui, where you think it's like a bit more niche, it's been writing very good XAML, I must say. XAML was actually compiled ready. So
that's I have different opinions on that. But
you have different opinions on that?
Yeah, that may be the case. I feel like it from time to time it confuses WPF XAML with Maui XAML in my
book at least.
it starts out with these weird constructs where it's like visibility dot collapsed instead of just is visible is true or something like that. Like these dialects, I guess, in XAML. Sometimes it still thinks, this looks about right, and it's not right.
My feeling is it's become better in understanding the Maui dialect. I remember like at the beginning it was like absolute rubbish. Like you couldn't, like every XAML was generated, it was just like, yeah, but I'll just take it from here.
I'll write it myself.
Yeah. Generally speaking, I think it's like interesting because I've been speaking, I was the Don and Maui day was in London, and there were like some very interesting discussions going on about like, hey, XAML sort of thing. I mean, this is nothing new. Should you go code first only, or should there be actually something completely new that replaces XAML, but is like XAML-esque? And yeah, I mean, I think these discussions are always very interesting. And one thing I now start to notice more and more that is becoming a trail of thought for me is like, well, yes, I mean, there might be a better approach or an easier approach, but how well will AI assist me in doing that approach? I think that's an interesting thoughts to actually even have to go and say like, well, yes, but what about
this? And typically how that goes is then it starts with this whole complimentary introduction, like, yeah, that's a good idea that you're having there. I would definitely do it that way, as if you've just taught it something new, which I don't know. I don't think you did, but yeah.
That's one thing I really don't like about AI. It's like so on the hype train. Sometimes I feel like every idea that I give it is like, oh yeah, that's the best idea I've ever seen. Let's just do that. And you go like, is it really the best idea? I don't know.
I just suggested adding one if.
Yeah. Very insightful, Stephen.
Thank you.
But that's AI. So I think like just generally speaking, there is I think if you're not using AI, you're just like sidelining yourself. It's like refuse to use Visual Studio back in the day because you'll stay with your text editor notepad and you don't need syntax highlighting because that's only for the week. I just think you're someone that will know how to use it will just be that much quicker, and it just takes time to learn skills with new tools.
Yeah, to separate the junk from the actual value.
I mean, it's getting better. I mean, we get like new models, and GitHub Copilot used to be only bound to OpenAI models. Now you get Sonnet also there, and Gemini from Google is also there. So they're different models, and some of them I think outperform some OpenAI models that you can get. So like for coding, I've been using a lot more Claude Sonnet 3.7. Which is actually in there until it says I've been rate limited, and then I'm always switching to a cheaper model. But yeah,
have you just a sidebar? Have you ever used Cursor?
I have not. Have you?
Okay. I've dabbled around a bit with it. Like it's really similar, I guess, to Copilot in the sense that it's its own little editor that looks very much like Visual Studio Code, basically. It had its good and its bad sides, as every AI tool has. But it also came up with some ideas that Copilot didn't, for example. Like, so there is some difference somewhere in that model sphere, I guess. But it wasn't distinctive enough to make it sort of like change the way I work with the tools I was already using, which also do all sorts of AI things. In other news, have you already generated a felt puppet version of yourself or a anime character version of yourself, which is all
Absolutely.
The rage?
Yes.
Absolutely. You did. See.
I did when I was on the flight back home from the MVP summit. I think that was like when the rage started to break out. And then I was like at an airport waiting for my next flight to go. And I then generated some images of myself or based off an image of myself. And I would say it was like really cool. And then I got home and then my wife asked me like, well, did you do a Disney version? I went like, no. And she's like, that's like
why not?
The only thing that people will be interested in because you will look cute. And I go, okay.
For once you will look cute, Mark.
Yeah, for once. And no, but it was like, I mean, it's like really, I did then like this jet lag photograph with my dog. Mm. And I would say it was a good picture.
Okay.
I mean, like from the basis of a very jet lag me and cute dog. Dog's such as cute. It just generated a really good picture. So I got that somewhere in my photo reel. Okay. Yeah.
Are we putting those in the show notes or?
No.
No.
Oh. No. Some things are just private, man.
Okay. Shame.
Yeah. Last time I brushed my teeth in public, it became a GIF. So.
That is true.
Right.
That is true.
But yeah.
No. Just to date this podcast even more, by the way, there is a new preview version of .NET 10.
I've seen that.
Fairly recently released.
Yeah, and if we don't say which preview it is, then we're safe.
Yeah, but if we talk about features that are in that preview, then we kind of still...
If we just say they're awesome.
Yeah, but then that doesn't fill the podcast. Hey, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay,
that's
thank
true.
You.
No, .NET 10 Preview 2 was released recently, I think.
Yeah, I think we're already at Preview 3.
Three, oh dear. See, I missed Preview 3. So tell me about it.
Well, I think the one thing that stands out to me, like there's also obviously a lot of low-level compiler stuff and blah, blah, that I'm just not qualified enough to even have an opinion on. But one of the things that I like is... more question marks, Mark. I need more question marks in my C# code. And in this case, it's an assignment question mark, which wasn't possible. Yeah. You can add a null conditional assignment. So if you say, let's say you used to have, if customer is not null, then customer.age equals blah, blah, blah. Now you can just say customer question mark dot age equals something. And it automatically does the thing where it's like, this is not null, then I won't be doing this assignment. Or this, if this is null, I won't be doing this assignment, I should say. And I think for assigning variables, that wasn't possible until just now, basically.
Yeah. No, I think, yeah. I mean, there are some things that I sometimes get like hints from my IDE that I'm still doing the old way.
And more question marks, Mark.
Yeah, it's just what was it? Yeah, I was like checking out lately. But that might just be me doing stuff wrong. But like, hey, if this is null, then do this. And I was like, do the check. Hey, if is null, then da da da. It's just sort of like, why didn't you just write the function like, you know, like property question mark dot function and it will do it for you. And we're like, yep, that's a lot shorter. I should actually look at that. Yeah. But there's also been like some updates around Dunno Maui. Like you can now do full screen video playback from a web browser. But I guess it's cool. I'll be honest, I have not written that many apps where you play videos in.
Where you video. No,
unfortunately not, no. But yeah, and performance improvements, they're always nice to look at. So they're improving there still. And I think like the one thing, so there seems to be like some little tidbits that are also in there. But be sure to check them out. Like, I think like many things of C# library that are coming this time, apart from the null bit, is like extensions are getting some additional things going on in C#. But yeah, for me, it's also like the null conditional assignment that you pointed out. I think that will be a sweet one because it will just make code a bit more compact to read and you don't have to wrap it in an if.
Yeah, and that, like, I'm still not fully on board with the question marks everywhere. Like, there are people who fully embrace it and go all question marks everywhere. I'm still the guy that needs to be triggered by the IDE to, maybe you should be putting a question mark here. But in the other side of it, like, I had a function recently where it was like, you can improve this with a question mark, you can put some sort of indexer construction here, which is like opening bracket dot dot index number closing bracket magic. When I was done, it was like, I'm not even like, what is this function? I don't recognize it anymore. Yeah, it doesn't always make it easier to read, but maybe that's my age. I don't know.
I think it's like sometimes it's just like stuff getting used to. Like, I remember this was already a few releases ago when they played around with the array indexes. So you used to only be able to write numbers in. Now you're able to dot dots or with the roof symbol.
The caret, I think that's called. Caret,
thank you. So you can now go from the reverse. And it's like, they're like a lot of times where I just go like, yeah, I don't know, probably neat. And then suddenly you're in a situation where you actually need them and you go like, this is actually pretty cool. This is actually pretty cool. But yeah, I think it's you always have to know, like, I think these things are always like options, and I think the discoverability becomes more and more of an issue when a language like grows, like C#, especially because they never cancel a feature. Yeah, they only add. But I must say, like, I just had this discussion lately, like, where someone said, like, yeah, you know, I really think they should, you know, like, make breaking changes in C#. And I was like, I don't know, man. I don't know. I mean, there's just some beauty to it that you take up a project that has been lying around for 10 years and you just like upgrade it to the latest .NET and it still runs. You don't have to like touch anything. And then suddenly libraries break and then you update the libraries and then the libraries go like, oh no, we changed interfaces around for no apparent reason whatsoever because we still do exactly the same thing. And you just go like, why? Like, why don't I have to invest like 4 hours to rewrite my code so it will adapt to your new interfaces, even though, yeah, you know, like, not really changed. But that might just be me being lazy. But
it keeps you busy. Like, that's why.
Yeah, but I mean, at the end of the day, like, did you really add any new value to the customer by just like migrating to the new library? Because I mean, I think he was happy with the old one. Just saying, you know, it just did what he had to do. So he doesn't even
know about the library, probably.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. But I mean, these are just like software things. So I think it's like really cool that C# is like maintaining all the old features, but it sometimes makes it a bit hard to like discover these new features. And I think that's also like something really neat when IDEs then suddenly come up with these suggestions. Because I remember it used to be like ReSharper back in the day that said like, hey, your loop block here, we could rewrite that in LingQ. And it went like, oh, cool. And then you refactored it to link you, and then you had like no clue what it did, but it was like so cool that it was link you. Yeah, these days I know what it does, so
finally,
progress, man, has to be done. And I mean, yeah, I think there's also the performance improvements that you're getting, like with each .NET upgrade, is like quite a cool thing. And usually, I mean, I think like from 6 to 8 or 8 to 10, like a lot less stuff is breaking. So that's cool. I mean, the most libraries are breaking because they introduce nullability, and I have like nullability warnings as error in my compiler because I don't like nulls.
But you do enjoy pain. Okay.
Depends. Like generally, no.
No.
But it happens. It happens. And they just have to go through it. But yeah. Another thing, .NET update, cool. But swing back to the AI thing. I think one craze that has been been going, I mean, you say it occurs and stuff. There's been this problem where every AI, if you want to like provide it with an update, or not an update, if you want to extend its functionality, you know, it's just like bringing in a domain that it doesn't really know yet, but you think it would be cool, like especially like if you got like these agentic mode things going on, like you want to make it aware that hey, I don't know, there's some, you got some tool around, like some additional build tools that you've written for your company and stuff like that, and you really like to make it aware of that. So if it like suggests you code, it then could like also dig into your own stuff. And there, I think Claude, the company behind Sonnet, came out with this standard, the MCP, the Model Context Protocol. And what it basically is, it's like a standardized API where you could then have AI hook into it. So if you're using an AI client like VS Code or I think Claude Studio, I don't know, maybe even Cursor, but more and more of these AI companies now incorporate this interface. And so what it allows you is like if you got a client like GitHub Copilot and you want to like extend it with features that you have from like a web service or something. It could also be something silly as a weather report, and you just want to like make it aware how the API works so it could actually dig into that. You can like extend your model, or you can like provide it an API interface where you add some metadata so it actually understands how it works, and then it can start to implement that. And there's even a C# library that you can use for doing this. And this is like one of the crazes that's just been happening. I do way too little for this, but I think it just would be like a bit of a miss to just leave that out, because I think this could open up some really cool new toolings. So if we like look at some tool providers or like larger software companies, they now could like extend GitHub Copilot. So if you like add your SQL plugin, maybe the SQL team will at one point like add an MCP, so it will understand better how SQL Server works. So if you ask it questions, it will then go like, oh yeah, you could do this statement, and by the way, we could just execute it against it and blah 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 blah. And I think okay. That's cool.
Yeah, it sounds cool, but like you said, I'm not sure if I'm too active in that side of things to use it soon. But
well, I mean, James Montemagnus brought out a YouTube video, so you just could hop on there and then just do your thing, you know, like code it out.
It's AI after all, so
But I think AI is becoming more of a thing. I wonder if we ever will see more local AI models, because I think like right now we got like a lot of these generalized AI models that just live up in the cloud, but maybe we'll see in the future more local running ones, because you can't have everything up in the cloud, especially like if you're like us, like mobile developers at heart or at times. You know, like internet is really cool when you have it, but when you don't have it, life still goes on. And
not good.
Well, I mean, you have to design for these things. And I mean, if your entire app relies on always having internet connectivity, it will just like, become useless sometimes.
But yeah, like since you mentioned local running model, I'm no expert on any of the AI stuff and how it works under the hood. But given that my laptop is already melting from this video call, I probably shouldn't be running a local model.
Well, I mean, if you upgrade and you really spend a lot of your hard-earned cash, I mean, these days
M4 Mac, bam.
Yeah, it's. I think like there are different factors, of course, that are at play. If you really want to like run these very large models that are public, like Olama is one, and this deep research, deep R1 thing. What? Yeah, I just forgot the name. But yeah, I mean, those models are out in the open, and you could, in theory, run them on your own. Mm. I still think it's like there's still some involvement because you will want to tweak it a bit, you know, like redo like at least the final layers and stuff like that. But I mean, it's definitely possible that you can then run those models locally, given the RAM. If you got enough RAM and enough GPU power, you could do that. I think most people will not have that amount of power, but they're like scaled down versions, which just means like the memory that they have, or like also the size of the neural net is a bit dumbed down, so it will be more performant like on your normal device. And for certain tasks, that might be absolutely enough. For general wisdom, it's not good enough. And I mean, there are like tons of models out there that are very specialized, and those specialized models, they do not need the ginormous amount that you then require for these large language models. I mean, there are small language models out there that will perform certain tasks just as well. Like if you want to have like a local assistant that is very specialized in certain aspects, you might just be good enough to do that with a smaller AI model. I mean, if you look at vision stuff, like image recognition, mm-hmm. you can easily run that these days on a phone. I mean, our phones are powerful enough to do that. It's just like we have implemented most of the tools that we require for that. So yeah, it's like it's a bit of a solved problem. And I think it's also like, while it is cool at the end of the day, it also is like it costs money to run these things. So if you don't have a business case behind it, or yeah, it can be tough to do it like for business wise. Hobby wise, I just think these days he still needs quite a bit of a piggy bank to afford it.
Yep. Yeah. I could always turn this studio into a server room, I guess.
Well, I mean, in wintertime, you would get like free heating in air quotes. But yeah, in summertime, it might get a bit hot, just saying.
Yeah. No. Luckily, I have one aircon unit here. So
oh, cool. Yeah.
It'll cool the servers, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but I think it's like cool. I mean, like, I don't know, like the latest Mac 4 Pro Ultra Max. They released a new Mac Studio, and that thing is just like a beast. Like if you max it out, it can run these very large language models. It just will cost you your firstborn, more or less,
and half a kid.
Yeah, but you could then run it. I mean, yeah. Maybe it's worth it too. I don't know. I'm not judging.
Yeah.
But if you go like to the latest Mac Studio, I'm just doing this right now.
Specking out a new Mac Studio. Hit buy.
Yeah, hitting buy. Let's see.
One kajillion Swiss francs.
The M4 Max. Yes. I want to max that out. I want to do 512 gigabyte of unified memory. Yeah, let's put in the largest SSD too.
Yeah,
I mean, we're at a mere $14,000.
That's I mean,
so it's all easy. All it takes. Yeah, 512 gigabytes of memory. I mean, that's insane. Unless, of course, you're on a server. But I mean, this is like a desktop PC, so yeah. Okay. I don't know how many 4K renderings you can do in parallel with 512 gigabytes. But
I have no idea.
Me neither. That's up for the Geralds who do the YouTubes.
Yes.
And on that note, this has been our news update. We have been your hosts, Mark Alibone.
And Stephen Davison.
Stay safe, hear you next time, and be sure to follow us on our socials. Bye!
Kidney beans.
Was this the right outro?
Fine for me. Wee.